All right, we'll get started. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Mavs Film Room Spaces, coming to you here on Monday, February 5th, 2024. The Mavericks just got their 27th win of the season, a 118 to 102 victory over the Philadelphia 76ers on the road. Of course, Philadelphia was playing without Joel Embiid, but the Mavericks got Kyrie Irving back. Luka Doncic played in this game. Maxi Kleber looked good for the second straight game. Josh Green also continued his strong play. And after a very frustrating first half, the Mavericks were able to play a much better second half, hit more of their shots, and they came out on top by 16 points. One of their better defensive performances, just by that scoring metric. So, a much needed win. Mavericks had dropped 8 of their last 10 games, 7 of their last 10 games, something like that. They were slowly fading as the trade deadline approaches here on Thursday. They were just, I think, a couple games ahead of the Lakers for, or not the Lakers, but they were only a couple games up on the 11th seed in the West. So it was starting to look very bleak. Obviously, this is just one win. There needs to be more wins that come after this, and there'll be a chance for that tomorrow night in Brooklyn. But it was nice to stop the bleeding. Mavericks didn't need any superhuman 40-point performances from anyone to get this win, so that was nice to see. And I don't know how much time we'll actually spend talking about this game because there's the trade deadline coming up, and I think that's the big focus for the Mavs now. So I'm joined here by Vinay. Vinay, how's it going?
What's up? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Not much to add on that game. I think first half people were about to burn the city down, including you. But I'm glad they kind of corrected course in the second half. Kyrie really brought them back, I think, in the third quarter. And then, role players really stepped up today, which doesn't usually happen with the Mavericks. So it's nice to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was nice to see Josh Green, like, was the guy who really set the tone for the Mavs early. Like, he was the one keeping them connected from the beginning. Kyrie Irving, like you said, I think was the one who who really got things going in the third quarter. Luka didn't really have a great game. He only had 19 points. I feel like this may be his lowest
Dang, he didn't
scoring.
finish above 20? I feel like that hasn't
No,
happened in a while.
it hasn't happened. I don't know if it's happened all season long.
Man.
That's Luka doesn't care about his stats, as I
I
saw one
do.
tweet say. No, I know.
I care about his. No, I'm kidding.
No, I mean, yeah, he didn't have a great game, but but I feel like he also got going there towards the end, which helped the Mavericks build what got a lead that got as big as 20. And then Maxi Kleber, I think he's a guy who deserves a lot of praise in this game. 14 points, he was 6 of 8 from the field, 2 of 4 from three, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. Just more than anything, he looked very comfortable on the floor. He operated in the short role very comfortably, as those 5 assists indicate to you. So he played 27 minutes too.
He had 21 against the Bucks, didn't he?
I
I
do
think he
not
did.
know. I
Okay.
couldn't watch the second half of the
Well, this
game,
is
but
something that Mavs for a month should know, but we're not doing our jobs.
that is true. Let's. I'm just looking right now.
I'm
He
pretty
did
sure he
have
had 21
21 against
inside of.
Milwaukee.
See, there you
Yeah.
go. There you go.
And it's actually funny. The last time the Mavericks won in Philadelphia was December 20th, 2019, and in that game, Maxi Kleber had a driving dunk from the corner against Joel Embiid. Tonight, he drove against Paul Reed and dunked, and so the Mavericks really haven't won in Philadelphia unless he's able to do that. So, all in all, great Maxi game. Good to see him contributing.
Yeah, I'm not expecting this. Like, it sucks to see Maxi moving around nowadays. I just generally just I don't want to say cooked, but man, it's close to that just with how he moves. But last couple of games have been nice to see just with how he's shooting and whatnot. But I have a soft spot for Maxi in my heart because like I saw him kind of growing up or developing as a younger player, kind of on those bad Mavericks teams and being like developing into a 3-and-D player. It just kind of sucks that he might be over the hill now.
No, I know. Especially with this extension that he's on right now. I mean, it's important for the Mavericks to get some kind of production out of him, to where he doesn't look like a negative asset. And we don't know how long he's going to be able to contribute like he has these
But
last two
like,
games.
yeah, GMs aren't gonna overreact to these two games,
Of
Like
course not.
NBA
Of course
GMs
not.
are
Yeah.
not, yeah. Like they're Maxi's like what he's done the last 2 years is what's gonna be in GMs' mind. And since that Western Conference Finals run, he just really hasn't been that good.
Yeah. You know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if you can, he's not going to have games like this every game, but there are games where he looks particularly bad and particularly washed. But if they can, you know, if they can get him to a point where he's not looking like that, then I think that's really the best case scenario at this point. Not to spend too much time on Maxi Kleber. I don't know. Well, is there anything else to talk about from this game other than the fact that the Mavs had an you know, much better second half effort? But it still doesn't really take away from kind of the underlying issues with this team and this roster.
No, I mean, I think some fans get frustrated. And I think you're one of them that when the Mavs just kind of jack up threes, and they do definitely jack up threes. But I mean, when you have Luka getting doubled most plays and it's just a pass, and it's a wide open corner three, like, I just don't get how you can pass up a shot like that. And I just think they need to keep shooting open threes. Like, I know it's painful to watch these like slumps sometimes, but man, these are just like open, like you just got to make them. You know, like that's why they're out there. You just got to make them. You got to keep taking them. If you're scared to shoot threes, like we've seen in the past with DeLon Wright, like you shouldn't play. But these players that are on the court, if you're open for three, you have to keep shooting.
Yeah. And it was thought that the Mavericks had made an upgrade in shooting this offseason with the acquisition of Grant Williams. Obviously, that has not panned out the way that we all thought it would, even though I thought he had a pretty good game today, all things considered. And then Seth Curry as well was thought to be a player that could help them, you know, shoot better. He's been, you know, he's been a non-factor for them this season. So I do think looking at the trade deadline, like shooting is an area in which they could stand to improve in. I think.
So who have they been connected to in terms of shooting though? Because I mean, I'm just going purely off like kind of their numbers. Kuzma's not like a
great
three-point shooter. Wiggins this year especially is not a good three-point shooter. So, I mean, have they really been linked to these shooter types? They haven't.
But what I was saying was it's just an area in which they could stand to improve. And I was just going to say, like, I think the four biggest needs for the Mavericks, maybe not in any order, but obviously number one is size. They need more size. They need a stronger front court. They need some ball handling depth, too, as we've seen during these the stretch without Kyrie Irving. It isn't particularly pretty when Luka
I texted you the other day, but like I hate how we have so many guards, yet there's like only two of them that I trust to like lead a unit on the floor. You know? And that's Luka, Kyrie, obviously. But like if it's just him out there, or it's just Dante Exum, or it's just Jaden Hardy, or any other guard in the team, it's just like, you know, and we're playing undersized as is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I do think that they need someone else who can, you know, who can run the offense. Because I think Jaden Hardy has been playing better recently, but he's still not a guy I would trust as a lead guard.
And I know it's summer league, but I mean, versus inferior competition in summer league, he just really couldn't kind of show that he had that lead ball handler. I mean, that's fine. He's developing into a player, and I think right now he's kind of more of a catch and shoot spot up guy. But you know, he's just not a lead ball handler type right now, which is part of the process, I guess. He might not ever be that, but that's just what it is.
Yeah, which is fine. I think that he's a fine young player that's going to develop. But for what this team needs right now, especially with Dante Exum's health and you know his injury issues, like there needs to be a reliable third ball handler on this team. A lot of how the Mavericks did when they made the Western Conference Finals, they had three guys who were capable of starting. But if they needed to come off the bench, they could do that too. So that's a need. And I think a backup center is like the other really big need for this team. They managed to play okay without Lively today. Of course, Maxey had a good game. But you do want some insurance behind Derek Lively, a more defensive-minded backup center, as Mark Stein put it today. Because again, when Lively's off the floor, they're playing undersized, even if Maxey or Dwight Powell is the five.
So how do they address all these needs with, I mean, compared to other teams especially, they don't really have the assets to kind of get an arms race with, let's say, the Knicks want to get into an arms race for P.J. Washington. I don't think that they could trump the Knicks offer. So how do they address these needs that all these other teams also are looking for too?
I think they either pray to God or buy a gun.
Oh, wow. That turned dark real quick.
Not like that, but I mean, you know, that's this for some, a little bit more rough negotiating tactics. But, you know, to your point, I mean, obviously, like, they're among the teams most consistently connected to players like Kyle Kuzma, like P.J. Washington. It's really going to come down to how motivated are other teams to make the deal. Do I think the Knicks are really motivated to trade for PJ Washington? I'm not entirely sure. So that provides an opportunity for the Mavs.
I don't have any sourcing on that. I just threw that out there. But if they have to compete with another team, it'd be tough for them to, you know. That's why I feel like Wiggins just like, it just kind of seems like it's going back to that guy, and like with the assets that we have and we could pay, like I feel like that sadly might make the most sense for us.
I mean, I think that's certainly a legitimate option for the Mavericks, and we'll get into some of that more. I think let's stop.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say let's start kind of at the top of what, you know, where I think that the Mavericks trade preferences are, and I think it's like Kyle Kuzma, 1, PJ Washington, 2, like those are the top two guys they're looking at. I think both of them kind of fit this team's core. They both have the potential to sort of, you know, grow and age well with this core. Neither of them are particularly old, and I think that they have a good reputation around the league. PJ Washington is 25, Kyle Kuzma is 28. Both of them we know are very talented players, so I think those are the top two preferences. Wiggins, I think, is someone who they'd be comfortable with if it was a deal in which they're not sending any assets, it's just matching salary, and I think that would probably be lower on their list of preferences. But, you know, I want to hear your thoughts on that too.
I think I saw Jake Fisher say that it doesn't seem like, I mean, who knows, stuff can change really quickly before the deadline, but I think he said today that it doesn't seem like the Wizards are going to trade Kuzma. So if you pivot to the second option there, PJ Washington, he hasn't played on a good winning basketball team in his career yet. So like, no matter how high you feel on him as a player, it's a projection on what he would do here. Like, how is he going to contribute on a winning team? With that said, I would be willing to include Josh Green in such a package for him because I'm just willing to, you know, take a gamble on something like that. And I think that type of player is exactly what this team needs.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think with Wiggins, you know, Wiggins, again, like the idea of him, I think is exactly the type of player, not exactly, but he's a player that the Mavericks would need. And if they can get, you know, the 2022 version of Andrew Wiggins, like that would change the dynamic of this team.
But aren't all these players kind of like ideas of the player that we're kind of like hoping fits in, but it's kind of, they're all ideas, you know, otherwise they wouldn't be on the trade market right now.
I wouldn't like necessarily. If
these guys were contributing on teams that were winning, then, you know.
That's a fair point. I think, you know, addressing each player individually, right? Like Kyle Kuzma, he's on a pretty terrible Wizards team. He's the second option there. That may not be where his role is, you know, on a winning team. But we know that he's contributed to a championship team. I mean, okay, whether or not, you know, you consider the bubble title legitimate, at the end of the day, that team was a good team. even before the bubble, they were a good team, and Kyle Kuzma was a part of that, and he's gotten better since that point. PJ Washington, I think, is a player who has flashed his potential if given a larger role on multiple occasions, most recently with that 43-point game that he had. So could he, you know, I think you made a good point when we were texting earlier. Like, both of those guys are probably going to be playing maybe slightly larger roles than they would play in an ideal scenario. But I do think that they both possess the talent to do it. It's not like you're betting too big on players that may not pan out here.
Yeah, if these players, like, you know, like I was saying, if these players were contributing players right now and winning teams, their prices would be way higher than we'd be able to pay right now. So that's who's available. I don't think the Wizards are going to trade Kuzma from what it sounds like, but who knows. I feel like PJ Washington or Wiggins seem more realistic for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think Wiggins on paper is a realistic option. Again, no one ever knows what the Warriors are thinking with their team. Like, you know, on the one hand, you hear about how they want to shed salary to try and stay under the second apron, but on the other hand, you hear that there's been no mandate from ownership to shed money. So at the end of the day, that might be something that materializes closer to the 2 p.m. Central Time deadline on Thursday. But, you know, my concern with Andrew Wiggins is, like, how motivated is he? That's just – I think motivation has always been an issue with him, and we're seeing it right now. And so, you know, he could help. Like, maybe he's the type of guy who needs a change of scenery every few years. But then that begs the question, like, how long will he, you know, how much longer will he take before he needs another change of scenery if the Mavs are to trade for him? So that's the big question with him.
Yeah, I don't. I go back and forth every day on if I want Wiggins or not. Like, the contract is just scary. How he's played this year is terrifying. At the same time, like, we saw it with our own eyes, you know, him contribute on a playoff team, on a championship winning team, in a role that we need. So, you know, that's why Nico gets paid the big bucks and I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be very interesting to see. We got Fozzle and Zach up here. I want to see if they got any thoughts on this thing. I don't mean to ignore them.
Nah, you're good, Jay. Yeah, I think Wiggins is like the ultimate buy low candidate because, as you guys said yourself, what he did in 2022 was almost deserving of that all-star nod. But yeah, I don't know. He was fine last season as well until he had to spend so much time on an absence because, if I'm not mistaken, because of his dad's health.
It was 21 games he took personal leave from the Warriors with, and it was, for his dad's ailing health.
Yeah, which is totally unfortunate and, I mean, understandable if he's checked out because of that. Like, I would be too if I was in his place. And I'm sure, like, well, I don't know what his deal has been this season, but if it's been anything like that, you know, I get it. But
it's been worse than that. This has been his worst season in his NBA career, including his rookie season. Like, it's been that bad for him.
Yeah.
The numbers are not great.
I know. His efficiency is atrocious, but I'm not sure, like, you know, as he said, sometimes a guy just needs a change of pace, a change of scenery, and I'm not entirely optimistic that could happen this season just because of how bad of a start he's gotten off to. Like, I think within the last month he's had a few decent games mixed in there, but, you know, obviously it's kind of hard to get back on track. Like, we see it ourselves with Grant Williams trying to get back on track after, like, the horrendous slump he's been on, which, you know, it's a slow process. So if we trade for Wiggins, personally, I think that move is one meant for the future. I will say that I think his defense has been mostly okay-ish this season after, like, you know, again, after the very worst of his slump in the beginning of the year. But I guess we'll just have to see. It's kind of a long-term move.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're, I don't know, like, he's buy low because of all the stuff. Like, he's having a bad year. His contract is really, really bad. I'm going to read it off real quick, actually, because we're on the subject. $24 million this year, $26 million the next year, $28 million the year after that, and a player option for $30 million the year after that, which he will assuredly accept. So, I mean, it is, like, in terms of trade price, it's not going to be a ton. Like, maybe you're talking about Rashawn Holmes plus Maxey or something like that. But, you know, like, you still have to pay for that contract in the future years, which is why I'm so torn on the subject because I just don't know how I feel about acquiring him or not.
Yeah, it's a gamble. And I think, you know, because the Mavs are pretty strapped for assets, it is one that they might have to take and hope that it pans out. But at the same time, just given how many, you know, missteps or players that haven't panned out in Dallas over these last few years, do you really want to try your hand at that again, or do you just want to try and get a player that you can, that you know for a fact will be able to contribute, even if you have to overpay for them? That's really the big question. Zach wants to speak, and I'm sorry for ignoring him for so long, so I'll let him say what he wants to. Zach, how's it going?
Good. No worries. Thanks for thanks for letting me speak. I feel really strongly about this, especially I know we haven't been super healthy, but I don't see why we would trade for anybody other than PJ Washington. It just doesn't make sense when you think about where our standing is, where if we are lucky, we get to the second round this year. If we get a favorable first round matchup, and you can say, like, assuming health, you know, we can be like a lethal team, something like that, as we were feeling at the start of the year. But especially with how deep the top of the conference is, I just don't see how this team pushes for the conference finals. And I think one thing that's really important for me is consistency in approach. And I think Nico made a very conscious choice, and one that I agreed with, to use the draft pick for Derek Lively to actually invest in the draft, deciding to get younger players, pieces that fit. And because of that, I don't want to trade Josh Green for someone who's 7, 8 years older than him and triple the price and way more miles. I don't
see
how
that makes.
Who are
you talking about trading Josh Green for?
Andrew Wiggins.
I don't think any of us would want to trade Josh Green in that package.
Yeah, I think a trade for Andrew Wiggins would be solely matching salaries. So like Tim Hardaway Jr. and I don't know who else.
Yeah, go I mean, there. I don't want to trade. Why would we trade Tim? I guess open dialogue here. Like, why would we trade Tim for Wiggins? Why would we trade Tim for Wiggins? Like, what?
Let me answer that question. I think it's that you're trying to first of all mix up your team. Like, this core as it stands is not good enough to do anything serious. Today's win doesn't change that. Tim Hardaway Jr. has been a great soldier for the Mavericks for the last several seasons, but the reality is they relied too much on his shooting to bail them out. And defensively, he's a disaster. Tonight was just one of the worst games the worst game that he's probably played this entire season. 0 points. The game changed when they took him out. And so I just feel like moving him is really the biggest step that they have to take to actually building a serious contender. It was kind of like with Porzingis, and obviously Porzingis is a lot better now, but back in the day, he was the biggest impediment to them moving forward as a franchise. And that's why they took the deal for Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans. They're in a similar position with Tim Hardaway, and Tim Hardaway is still productive, but you know, where has that gotten the Mavericks? They're still a team heavily reliant on the three. And you know,
can I push back on that a little bit?
Sure.
I mean, I think KP's like contract and trade price was definitely like an impediment on what the Mavericks could do during the Luka thing. But I feel like in spite of all that, like the Mavericks front office just did a piss poor job of what they could do around that. Like I get they had the KP like hurdles and all that stuff, but like they still could have done way better to build around the two than they did. Like, it wasn't just because KP's contract and all that stuff that we couldn't do this or this. Like, they still could have done more. I feel like this is kind of a cop-out. That's just me.
Also, real quick, like, right before, I think Jay might have mentioned this a long time ago. He aggregated a report that said that Tim's trade value was surprisingly low around the league, which I'm not surprised by that. Defensively speaking, he's, you know, one of the worst starters in the league, I imagine. So as much as I loved him, like, he's not, I don't think, you know, people outside of Dallas value him as much as people in Dallas do.
Yeah, and I mean, he's definitely a product of this system, you know, that's allowed him to get a lot of open three-pointers. And to his credit, he's delivered on that, you know, when called upon, whether as a bench player or a starter. I mean, he's done it in the playoffs. He's done it in the regular season. So I'm not knocking him, and he deserves a lot of praise. But the issue is just that defensively, he's such a liability. And I know that he's good at drawing charges, but, you know, that's drawing charges is not how you win on the defensive end. And, you know, you see so many times when you go against teams with elite wing players like, you know, Anthony Edwards or Jason Tatum, Aaron Gordon, like, he's the guy that's getting matched up on them, switched on them, and it's just, you know, it's terrible. And then when his shot is not falling and you're getting that kind of defense like you were today, it's potentially disastrous for you. And so I love Tim Hardaway Jr. If he was a lesser paid player in a smaller role, I think that would be ideal for him, but I do think that they have to move on from him at some point. Or not. I mean, if you're able to acquire one of these players like PJ Washington or Kyle Kuzma or Andrew Wiggins without giving up Tim Hardaway Jr., then great. I just don't see that happening due to salary matching.
So that's, you know, that's my point. And I think it's obviously really easy to sit up here and just, you know, nitpick. But Tim is a very valuable offensive player. Luka's always going to lean more on the ISO ball. And Tim being able to knock down shots at volume the way he is capable, I think is really important. I think the question I guess I have for you all too is, I didn't watch the game tonight. I saw the box score. Josh looked like he was great. I guess my question is, are we ready to give up on what Josh can become given his age and just kind of cash in and say, hey, we'd rather PJ Washington speed it up a few years? Like, how do we feel about all that?
Does anyone want to take this first, or should I?
Yeah, I'll take it first. I mean, I personally am not ready to give up on Josh. I still, and you know, there are plenty of people on Mavs Twitter who will be like, yeah, don't let that 2 good weeks of Josh fool you. But I mean, I don't know. This is a personal thing. I've always been invested in him since the moment we drafted him. So like, yeah, there's that. But no, I don't know. It's tough to say because, again, he is so young, and he has shown, like, continuous improvement throughout his career. There's, like, not really any disputing that, in my opinion. But I will say, like, PJ Washington, he's not a bad player at all. He's good, and he definitely fills a need for the Mavs. So I'm not saying, like, you know, I think Josh is an acceptable price to give up for him, but I guess it really, you know, all boils down to the whole change for change's sake thing that Jay has gone on about, among other people. And I don't know. I'm not sure if I would do that deal as currently constructed as a one-for-one swap, but, you know, you expand on that a little more and add some more things in, preferably from the Hornets side, to make the deal sweeter. And then you might have something that I would personally find acceptable. But yeah. Yeah, I'll let Jay or Vinay give their thoughts.
Well, I think what's important there, I think what I care about most, since there isn't a specific right or wrong, is just consistency. Either commit to, you know, we have Kyrie for this year and 2 more years. So either commit to pushing all the chips in to try and maximize winning a title with Kyrie under contract with Luka. And if you're not, then don't sacrifice young assets for half measures that aren't really going to move the needle. Like, I don't want to trade Josh for a guy who's 3 or 4 years older if we're not then going to fully commit to maximizing winning now, because that would be the only reason that makes sense to trading for PJ. But I don't want to trade our younger piece but then not try to get good enough to where we could actually make an impact now, because then that just takes away 3 years of runway.
Well, I think, yeah, that's a good point. But I will say this, though, that again, it all just goes back to this, that this core is not good enough as presently constructed. And so, you know, I don't necessarily view it as giving up on Josh Green if you're trading him for PJ Washington, for example. I view it as the cost of doing business. And you have needs, which is size and front court skill. PJ Washington addresses that to some degree. And he's 25. You figure he can grow with this core. And so, you know, the two things you have to look at are, one, if you have Luka Doncic on this team, regardless of who you have around him, you're going to be competitive to some level. Does the player you acquire allow you to continue to be competitive and potentially be more competitive? That's the question you have to ask yourself. The other question is, can you expand that deal to get other players too? And I think that's where the Mavericks might be in a lot of these negotiations is, you know, last year with the Kyrie Irving trade, it was trading many assets for one. And I know they got Markieff Morris in that deal. I'm not counting him because Markieff Morris didn't contribute, but they traded two starters in Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith, in addition to the first-round pick and a second-round pick for Kyrie Irving. It depleted, you know, two starters for one starter, and they didn't do any other trades to sort of make up for that depth.
Dinwiddie considered a starter? I mean, I know he started when we traded.
Yeah, he was a starter for us last year.
I mean, but calling him a starting level player seems...
Well, yeah, he was. What I mean is that he was a big minutes player for us, an important player for us. Whether or not other teams would consider him a starter, he was a starter for our team. So that's what I mean. But, you know, I think you have to think about that this time, especially with the precarious situation the Mavericks are in, just, you know, at 4 games over .500 in the play-in, but not fully clear of missing the play-in. You don't want to have a repeat of last season. So I think it's either expand your, you know, if let's say they're trading for PJ Washington, right? Can you expand that deal to include someone else like Nick Richards and maybe Ish Smith as a throw-in? Or can you line up another deal so that whatever players you trade to Charlotte for PJ Washington, you were able to sort of replace them to some degree, maybe not to the same degree of what you were giving up, but can you at least get a replacement level player in return? And I think that's hopefully where the Mavericks negotiations are at this point, because I do think, you know, anytime you make a big trade, which I think getting PJ Washington or Kyle Kuzma or Andrew Wiggins would constitute a big trade, there's an adjustment period that has to happen. And the Mavericks, unfortunately, are not really in a position to where they can, you know, they can allow that adjustment period to drag on for too long. It has to be a pretty seamless fit. So, I mean, I do agree with Zach's assessment that whoever they trade for this year, you know, should help them win now. But the reality is, I don't think there's a deal out there that's going to make the Mavericks contenders overnight. It's just about seeing if a different mix of players works and getting a player that you think can grow with Luka and Derek Lively, who I view as really the only true foundational pieces on this roster.
No, and I agree with that, but that's why I think Wiggins isn't the answer. Even if we're not giving up Josh, we're tying up money, we're tying up cap space, and he's not young. He is closer to leaving his prime than the beginning, and he's declining. I would rather not do a deal than trade for Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, I can see that logic. And I will say for the PJ Washington thing, his age being different from Josh Green, or him being older than Josh Green, is maybe a little overstated in this aspect. The Mavericks clearly need size and versatility on the wing, and they need defenders. And Josh has been great. I don't think even mentioning him in these trade rumors or even, you know, thinking about what he's worth this season is kind of selling low on him. In fact, I would say it's the opposite. As somebody who has really believed in Josh Green and what he can offer, not only this team, but like how versatile of a player he is and how many different skills he has, I think his ceiling is higher. I think a lot of us agree on that. But for a couple of years, he hasn't been hitting those corner threes, and we just saw him hit almost all of them tonight. Like, this has been a very good season in terms of, hey, his ceiling can be a lot higher. So I think he's maybe the one guy that, going to Jay's point, that you can put in a deal and expect to get maybe one or two pieces because another team is going to value him. The other thing is, like, we need size. We're playing Grant Williams a lot of minutes, and he's just not the player that we need to play the four, right? Also, going to the Nick Richards point, like, Derek Lively's out right now, and we've seen this season how thin that front court is. So if it takes selling high on Josh Green for the Mavericks to get one or two rotational pieces, I'm willing to do it, and I love Josh Green as a Maverick.
Vinay, you have anything?
I mean, Zach's a smart guy. I really like his takes when he comes on. I was on that side of his when he was saying that I just wouldn't touch Andrew Wiggins with a 10-foot pole. And I was on that side for a while, and then I kind of wavered back and forth the last few days just because I watched the Mavericks play, and I'm so tired of watching Grant Williams play. It's really, really how I changed my mind on it. But, I mean, I think after listening to Zach speak, I don't think you can touch Andrew Wiggins. I might change my mind in the next hour. I don't know. I'm an indecisive human being.
That's fair.
I also agree that I overstated the age difference between PJ and Josh. Like, it's barely 2 years.
Yeah, PJ Washington.
I more was thinking Wiggins and Josh, because my thinking is I don't really. But then we talked about Tim, and my point is Tim, what he does well, even though we would rather what Wiggins is capable of doing well, Tim actually is currently doing what he does well. Tim's like a better player than Wiggins right now, even if Wiggins is a better fit. If Wiggins can't perform, like, Wiggins can't do this with Steph, who's even better off ball. So what makes us think he can do it with Luka? So
I haven't really – it's hard, especially now with my job, it's hard for me to watch all these other NBA games, so I kind of feel undereducated in talking about how Wiggins has played this year with the Warriors. I just kind of seen the numbers, and, I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, he's played with Steph Curry, and if you're not shooting well off of Steph and Curry, then there's probably some bigger underlying issues there.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, I think your guys' concerns about Andrew Wiggins are completely valid. And, you know, they're my concerns too. Like, it's just how much does he actually care about basketball and winning? Like, you know, the idea of him is better than I think what he is in practice. But,
dude, you know, so like, we deal with Christian Wood, right? Like, Christian Wood, does he care about basketball or whatever?
Exactly.
That's fine. He didn't care about basketball, but we got rid of that after the year. Like, he was an expiring contract. You know, if Wiggins comes in, we do the trade, and he doesn't care about basketball, then, oh, shucks, we have him for how many more years?
Three more years after this, yeah.
So, like,
that is a great point.
Trading for other players that don't care about basketball, you got this guy tied up for more than just this year.
That is a great point, and that's why I don't believe that he's as high on the Mavericks' list of preferences. I mean, I'm sure that they've had discussions, plural, with the Warriors about Andrew Wiggins, but I do think their name might be getting thrown out there a little bit more to sort of drum up the market. I mean, we saw the Pacers mentioned as an Andrew Wiggins suitor today as well. But I do think
I'm not good at fake trades, bro. I don't mess around with the trade machine and all that. I let, you know, whatever happens, happens. But, like, if the package is, like, I don't know if it's possible, Maxey and Rashawn Holmes for Wiggins, is that something that you would be against?
I wouldn't be against that. I mean, I think that, you know, Maxey's played two good games right now, but, you know, is
Zach,
can you...
Maybe a better question for Zach. Zach, if the price was just, let's say, Maxey and Rashawn Holmes.
Holmes. So it's funny.
Go ahead.
I was actually playing around with the trade machine today, and I looked at that. I think that works. I think that barely works. You know, that is so little. I would consider it, but even then, remember what we had to do to get off of KP's contract because we took an asset. Like a talented player who wasn't fitting well, but he had a bloated contract number. And what we had to do, like we had to attach a second round pick to get two guys who didn't nearly equal his talent. And I would rather save those contracts. Rashawn will have one more year, Max will have one more year. I would rather save those contracts to package with young picks to get a bigger piece back. That's where I kind of think, this is like the perfect trying to walk the middle ground. While I think in a vacuum, you take Maxey Kleber and Rashawn Holmes, two, you know, aged bigs who really don't fit with us timeline-wise to take a swing at Andrew Wiggins. In a vacuum, that's logical. That makes sense. But I think you have to think about all the potential iterations or the outcomes that can happen. And it's more likely than not that we end up burning two tradable contracts for a question mark that has serious long-term consequences and further hamstrings us. And it's not like we're saying, it's not like with Kyrie where we say, if Wiggins pans out this year, we can win the title. Like, I don't think we have any feelings that Wiggins is going to come back this year to the form we would need him to win the title. So just because if in the range of outcomes, I'll put it this way, Vinay, if in the range of outcomes was we could win the title this year or next year, with trading for Wiggins, of course I do that. I just can't see that, so I don't want to do that trade.
Yeah, I mean, no, I definitely feel you. I don't think I would do it too. That's about the absolute most I would trade for Andrew Wiggins. So, like, when I say, like, that might be the guy that I'm willing to do, that's, like, the most I would trade for Andrew Wiggins. I'm still hesitant on doing that. It kind of reminds me of the offseason trade package of Tim Hardaway Jr. and Rashawn Holmes for Ayton or whatever else it was. And I think a lot of us wanted that trade to happen, but I think in hindsight, that would have been a really bad trade for us.
I want to ask you guys this question. Do you think Maxey Kleber and Rashawn Holmes constitute tradable contracts? Because I do feel like at their salary number, yes. But when you consider the type of production they've been giving, I don't know how much appeal they have around the league, if at all.
It has nothing to do with their talent level. It is solely a number on paper that facilitates a trade. Like
that's fine.
It's irrelevant at that point.
Well, I disagree with you there because if they were expiring, I'd say yes. But they get, you know, Maxey Kleber like has two more years after like this. Rashawn Holmes is another year after this.
Well, exactly. That's my whole point. It's not like they're expiring this coming year and we're debating, do we pull the trigger on this because they're expiring anyway and we're going to lose that value. These contracts get more attractive the longer we hold them because they are middle tier contracts that are expiring, and I don't know if Maxey's declining, but like 2 years from now, Maxey's contract, $11 million, you attach that to a young asset with a first or second round pick, that's going to, and these are all what ifs, these are all hypotheticals, but we're deciding which is a game I don't like to play because I've done it so much as a Mavs fan the last 11, 12 years. But if you're going to play that game, you are much better served, to quote Donnie Nelson, keeping the powder dry, to see if you can turn that into something else. And at the, you know, at the very least, if there's not a deal out there that makes sense, then those deal, then those contracts come off our books, and you know, no harm, no foul. But if you decide to take that shot with Andrew Wiggins, who makes triple the money that either of those guys do, is on the hook for longer. Like, I don't think his talent and fit justifies taking that risk, is my point.
That's fine. And so I think, you know, I think it really just comes down to your belief. Like, do you think the potentially, you know, continuing to be mediocre with, you know, with Maxi Kleber and Rashawn Holmes on this team giving you what they give you is less risky than trading for Andrew Wiggins, you know, with his issues and his salary? Like, that's the big question, because – you know, there's no doubt that if Maxi Kleber and Rashawn Holmes continue to stay on this team, there's only a certain degree to which the Mavericks can reach as a team, right? But if they do trade them for Andrew Wiggins, there's a chance that that just looks like a horrible contract, and you wish that you had two smaller contracts that you just rode out for a year or two before they became tradable. So it is not an easy decision. I do agree with you there.
Jay, what's the best case scenario? Like the rational best case scenario trading.
We win the championship the next 3 years, Zach. That's the best case scenario. Okay, but I realistically, mean, if Andrew
Wiggins, best case scenario of what? Of what?
Of doing that trade.
Oh,
like
I agree with Vinay. We win the championship. That's the best case scenario.
You really think? No, I don't.
Do
you guys, really have that much?
No,
faith?
I wasn't being serious. I don't think they're going to win threepeat. Okay, Zach.
No, I didn't think so. But then Jay supported you in what seemed like a non-ironic way.
No, okay. Best case scenario. I mean, who? I'm not saying that. Like, you're not putting them in Denver, Clippers. Who are the other teams in the
West? Yeah,
I'm blanking. You're not putting them.
By the way, Rashawn and Maxie, here's the thing. The money does work. By the way, I just checked. So that is viable.
Here's my thing. I get they can't reach those contender teams. I get that. But like, I still want them to like try to make the team a little bit better without sacrificing your entire whole future, but make the team a little bit better around Luka, Kyrie. You know the needs that you need, and see what Luka, Kyrie, these guys in a playoff series looks like. We haven't even seen Luka and Kyrie in a playoff series yet together. Like, you don't know how it would go. Before we made the Western Conference Finals that playoff run, did anyone in Mavs Twitter think we were going to make the Western Conference Finals? No. Last year, before the season started, did anyone think we were going to miss the play-in? No. No one thought that was going to happen. We just have to see how this stuff shakes out. Like, do the best you can. Like, yeah, we're probably not going to make the NBA finals, but you could still like make a move here or there, improve a little bit around Luka and Kyrie. Those two guys, you don't know what's going to happen in playoff series. I promise you, in spite of all our roster issues, a lot of teams don't want to see that in the playoff series. They just don't.
No, I totally agree to your point. Let's see what these guys do without taking a significant additional long.
I think I'm out on Wiggins. Like, actually, you convinced me of that.
I'm more trying to convince Jay at this point. Like, with the way the Warriors season is going, I think the Wiggins deal will be on the table in the offseason unless he has a dramatic turnaround. And then in that case, sure, I was wrong and I'll eat crow on that. Yeah. I don't think that'll happen, but you know, we can discuss this after we lose to the Clippers.
I agree with you. Again. It's like, too many red flags. And if you ask him to come here, he's immediately going to be asked to guard the best of the best. It'll just feel like, it's, I don't know. Zach, you've sold me on it. I'm completely out on any Andrew Wiggins. If the Mavericks wanted to trade me for him straight up, I'd still be out on the deal. Like, I just wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't touch it. Wouldn't touch it.
All right. My job here is done.
Yeah. I mean, look, I can't claim to say that I'm 100% against Andrew Wiggins like you guys are, just because I'm just more in favor of change. But I do tend to agree with you that it's not my first, second, or even third preference for players that the Mavs should trade for. But at the end of the day, if they do it, I think I can see the logic behind it. It's a gamble, no doubt. But I understand, as Mavs fans, we're kind of jaded on betting on players rehabilitating their careers here or changing their reputations here. It doesn't always happen.
Man. And the Wiggins Spotrack's just been up in front of my screen the whole time, and it's just haunting me the more I look at it.
Like, we've already struck gold once taking Spencer Dinwiddie, rehabbing him, and then being able to flip him with the 29-year-old rotational player for Kyrie Irving. Yes, we had to attach a pick to it, but I don't want to play that game again. So, yeah, I'm also just ticked off at this team in general. So,
no, but I mean, like, I'm cool with PJ Washington. If it's Josh Green, I love Josh Green, I think, more than all of us in Mouse Film Room, including Fossil, even though I didn't know Fossil was high on him. But I've been a huge Josh Green fan. But if you're talking about PJ Washington swap, I mean, I would do it. I would just do it. I like Josh Green, but, you know, we have to assume we're going to be in the playoffs this year. And we want to see the fit with PJ Washington next to Luke and Kyrie as opposed to Josh Green.
And, you know, the thing with Josh Green is he's a guard at the end of the day. I wouldn't say he's a wing. I mean, he can slide down to the wing at times, but, you know, he's a guard. And so with Luka and Kyrie, like, where does he exactly fit in there? I mean, he's done a great job these last few games, but is that a sustainable way to win? I don't know. But I do agree. You know, even though I have historically not been the highest guy on Josh Green, I do believe that you need to trade him in the right deal because he's looked good these last few games. And tonight might have been his best game that he's played with Luka and Kyrie. I mean, I know there's that joke on Mavs Twitter about how when both Luka and Kyrie are out, he plays his best games. But I thought tonight, even though both the superstars played, like, he looked great. And so he's obviously a player that can grow with the core because of his age. It's just a matter of, can you fit him in and maximize his talent? Or if you have a deal to address one of your biggest needs, is that worth the cost of doing that business?
What is the core when you say the core outside of Luka and Lively?
Those are about the guys. I mean, there's some role players on this team that I like, but Luka and Lively are the core, you know, core members of this team. And look, I think another thing that we need to say about this trade deadline is, yes, the Mavs do have a window with Luka and Kyrie, but the reality is that window potentially could still exist after Kyrie, you know, whether he retires or they just choose to move on from him, etc. You're really playing for the Luka window right now. Everyone else is an accessory. And I don't mean to say this derogatorily. I have respect for everyone who plays here. But the reality is Luka is the guy. Everyone else is here to support him, right? So whatever trade you make, while you hope that it elevates you this year, you're also looking to make sure that it can elevate you next year and potentially the year after that. And so I think that's what the thinking has to be. You have to get honest and understand that no matter what trade you make this year, you're likely not going to turn into a championship contender. But could you build the foundation to be one within the next three seasons?
Why are you qualifying that saying likely not a championship contender? Like, do you really think PJ Washington makes them a championship contender?
I don't, but PJ
Washington and Andrew Wiggins to this roster, is that a championship contender?
It's hard to say that. I mean, crazy things have happened, like the Lakers last year, or even the Mavericks 2 years ago. But I do agree those are like kind of once in a generation.
Dude, I just want to see Luka, Kyrie, Derek Lively play basketball games together for consecutive stretches of time. That's literally all I want. And I want trade pieces too, obviously. But I don't think
I just want us to play. I just want us to play a different style of basketball, one where we're not just chucking threes every game and praying that they go in.
We could have a whole debate on that subject. I'm just going to say really quickly, a team with Luka Doncic generating wide open threes should keep jacking threes. But that's my only rebuttal to that.
That's fine. But in the event that a three-pointer is contested, you would rather have the guy be able to attack off the dribble.
Do we shoot a ton of contested threes with the role players?
Or Tim Hardaway Jr. does every now and then.
also just have to say, I'm as annoyed with Grant as anybody else. I was really excited about that deal. We are like less than 6 months into this. I know it's not looking good, and it probably won't. But it's not like we're paying him $25 million a year. This contract, especially in 2 years with the new TV deal, it's really not that bad of a contract. I know he's frustrating. But think about all the crap we went through with Reggie Bullock. I think it's important to at least be patient and give Grant a little bit of time. He's really annoying. I get it. But there was what happened at the start of the season, like, still happened. We were really hyped about him for a reason, and he has since fallen off a cliff, but he's like 25 years old. You know, he's not 29 past his prime. So I think there's some optimism there.
I forget he's 25 years old with the way he moves on the court, man.
Although today, I don't know if you guys noticed, But there was a point in the game where he got a rebound and he ran up the floor and got fouled and shot free throws. I was like, wow, I don't think I've seen this from him all season.
Looked like me sprinting last week. But yeah, he looked good.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see that the weight that he's lost, he's like finally starting to get a little bit more comfortable playing at this weight. That being said, I still don't think he's producing up to the level that the Mavs had expected from him. You know, there was that rumor earlier today that the Mavs and Bucks were discussing a trade, Grant Williams for Bobby Portis, but then that was from Mark Stein. But then Mark Stein published a note right after that saying that some new information he received was that the Bucks were not willing to do that trade straight up and it would have to be expanded for them to consider it. So, but I just thought it was interesting that the Mavericks were looking to, you know, to move on from Grant Williams, like you said, not even 6 months after signing him. And you put that on top of Brad Townsend's article from last night, and we didn't even talk about that. But Brad Townsend tore into the Mavs in that article to the point where he said the Mavericks can't claim that the Luka-Kyrie partnership works, not because they don't fit together, but because there just hasn't been evidence that it's a sustainable, solid plan. And it's hard to disagree with that statement. Because
I push back on that a little too. Bit. I keep cutting off. But
no, you didn't cut you off.
So typically, I'm all for roasting the Mavs to, you know, give them bad PR to guilt them into doing something. But if we had this thesis that Luka Kyrie couldn't be fully evaluated last year because the supporting cast was so poor and didn't fit, and then when we got some better fitting pieces and everybody was healthy, we started 8-1, and then everybody gets hurt. Like, that same article could have been written about Jokic and Jamal Murray 2 years ago. There's evidence it doesn't work long-term, because when Murray was going off in the bubble, Jokic couldn't beat AD, and then when Jokic was winning MVP, Murray got hurt. There's like very similar parallels between those two, and I don't think you can say it doesn't work until these two are healthy in a playoff series and lose.
Okay.
That's fair. The only issue is you got to get to the playoffs first.
No, I agree, but we're also acting like we're the Warriors here as the 12th seed. We're the 8th seed. We're the 8th seed. We're two games back of the 6th seed. Like, I go back and forth, I think, between, you know, doomer and optimistic. And I think the reality, as it typically is like right in the middle. But I disagreed with that just from the perspective of saying Luka and Kyrie don't work. I think nothing has happened with Kyrie that I didn't anticipate. A lot of negatives there. But all I'm saying is, Kyrie's getting older. We knew injuries were part of it. That's part of why Kyrie, who should be worth $55-60 million a year, in addition to his off the court antics, that's why we got him for $40 million a year. Because you have to bake that in, the games he misses because of injury. So if we're paying Kyrie $60 million, then maybe you can say you're paying this guy a super max. He has to be healthy. You know, you want a guy healthy regardless, but I think it's more like questioning Grant and questioning Jason Kidd than saying Luka and Kyrie don't work together. So I actually strongly feel that way. I didn't feel a need to call out Nico yet, because my very last thing is, I'm not fully evaluating Nico Harrison until the end of next season. I'm giving him time, because he inherited a total shit show and he did what he thought was best 2 years ago. And we've really only had one full off season of him really with the slate wiped relatively clean from past mistakes. And I think what happens the rest of this trade deadline, the rest of the season, I'm giving him one more off season, and let's see what happens in the 2025 playoffs. And then let's judge.
I mean, shit. I do agree with that. Even though I did tweet earlier today that these guys are, you know, GMing and coaching for their job, there needs to be some pressure and some urgency. But I do agree with you that I think Nico has done some good stuff. Although one could argue was all undone by letting Jalen Brunson go. But
that wasn't his fault. That wasn't his fault.
Nico deserves some blame for that. It's definitely mainly Donnie's fault, but Nico deserves some blame for not. If he had the option to extend him for 4 for $55 during the year, he deserves some blame for that too. But definitely, I would blame most of that on Donnie. But Nico should not be absolved of any blame.
Yeah, definitely. But I don't know about end of next year, but I do think that end of this year is what I'm evaluating Nico on. And look, I like Nico personally, and I want him to succeed. I want Jason Kidd to succeed. But at the end of the day, results are what matters in this business. And thus far, since the Western Conference Finals, the Mavericks have not delivered too many promising results. So, you know, if they continue to free fall, I just don't know how.
Yeah, but what kind of message are you sending to this brand, to Luka and all that, by firing?
I agree.
Coach, that just sounds ridiculous. Yeah, that's why I hated that tweet when you tweeted it.
Maybe Jason Kidd.
I understand Jason Kidd. I maybe understand. Like, that's fine.
But I agree. It doesn't send a great message.
Nico Harrison's job at all.
But what message does losing send to Luka? That's the other thing, right? It's complicated.
Not a good one, but firing the GM and head coach like this year, especially when the injuries have been insane this year, that's a little dramatic.
I will say this: like, presumably, you're not doing that without his input. So I'm not saying make a unilateral.
Yeah, but that's
not make a unilateral decision to go do that. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah. So, a couple things. I do understand faulting Nico for the Brunson thing. I think we really need to realize how abnormal of a situation that is. How guys like that don't accelerate. Even though I'm the one who wanted to keep Brunson, and Jay, when you said Christian Wood will replace some of the scoring, we'll be fine. When Jalen left, I was totally pessimistic, and that ended up being true. I don't hold Jalen Brunson against Nico because there was too small of a sample size for him to be able to make that decision, especially coming off of how poor Jalen was in the playoffs against the Clippers. Second, you were talking about it's a results-driven league. Like, the results are he made the Western Conference Finals his first year and then lost a guy that wasn't his fault losing, and the team totally cratered. He had Cuban hanging over his shoulder the whole time. He's really only been free of the reins of what Donnie messed up and Cuban taking a step back for a year. So it is a results-driven league, but it has to be results from the person's actions. And he hasn't had enough actions to judge him yet, in my opinion.
Bro, here's another thing. Derek Lively, I know he hasn't played in a couple of games, man. But I'm telling you, he is just scratching the surface of what he can be as a basketball player. And that's a Nico. I mean, people, not everyone on Mavs Twitter wanted Derek Lively to be the pick at 10 or 12. And Nico, whoever the scouting department was or whoever made the pick, like, they had conviction on that pick and they nailed that pick. And I don't think he scratched how good he's going to be. And that Nico Harrison, I think, deserves a lot of credit for that.
And I think one thing Nico Harrison deserves for, because again, I know I tweeted that out earlier today, but I've been one of the bigger Nico Harrison fans throughout the last couple of years on Mavs Twitter. But I think another thing he deserves credit for is the structure that he's brought to the Mavericks front office. He's brought in more people than what was under Donnie Nelson. He's brought in Andrew Baker, Matt Riccardi. Michael Finley's gotten promoted underneath him. They brought in Dennis Lindsay as a consultant. They're clearly, you know, they want to run a real organization in his front office. So, and I think he deserves credit for that. And like you said, Vinay, Derek Lively is ultimately a product of that kind of organizational synergy. Because that, you know, that's a player that I didn't have on my radar at 10, and I don't think many people did either. I think most people, you know, at least with my knowledge of the draft, felt that Derek Lively was a project player that would go maybe in the late teens or early 20s. 10 was,
I will say,
absolutely
no, but some, yeah, there were some that thought Derek Lively was a good pick, but it definitely wasn't the vocal majority of Mavs Twitter. That
yeah, and I don't claim to be knowledgeable about the draft. It was people who are really into that I think.
No, and I mean, so far, he's not necessarily 3 for 3, but we can't say he's definitively missed on any draft pick. Nico hasn't missed on any draft pick. Lively, he hit. Hardy, we are optimistic about. And then Omax is the other guy. That's all he's had. And brought it, you know, Dennis Lindsay had a big impact on it, but he brought in Dante Exum, Derek Jones Jr. Like, if you want to look at, like, let me ask you guys this. What is, aside from Brunson, the worst move that Nico has made?
Christian Wood, maybe? I mean, depends.
Christian Wood or Grant
Williams? They gave up that first-round pick, depending on how you value that first-round pick, and then with Grant Williams, they gave a future pick swap, but, yeah. You could argue maybe
I agree with Christian.
I think my one gripe I have with Nico, and I mean, I don't know what he had available to work with, but after the Kyrie trade last year, I was really surprised they didn't make like any other move for like a front court player after that. That's probably one of my biggest knocks on Nico during his tenure this year, or during his tenure so far as a Mavericks general manager, is like not doing anything after getting Kyrie was really puzzling to me. I know but still, that was
really, you know, I think that all makes sense, but I think especially with the new CBA, with how much teams are hamstrung from hitting both the aprons, drafting and developing, it's always been important, but it's way more important than ever has to get productive, cheap players. And in the next 4 to 5 years, that is the single biggest thing I think that Nico does well of all the things that I have the most information on. And that alone makes me really optimistic about him.
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely hit on their minimum signings, at least this season with Axum and Derrick Jones. And obviously, you know, Grant Williams, yeah, he hasn't played well, but I think all of us had higher expectations for him based on what he did in Boston alone. He hasn't even played up to that level yet. But again, results matter, and so I'm not absolving Nico of his mistakes either. But I think overall he's been a productive GM, and I'm optimistic about, you know, about what he can do. But that being said,
I called for his job earlier today.
Yeah, okay. I was pretty mad watching the first half because it just quickly talking about the game.
Of course, like, you were. You overreacted the first half. That's all it was. Just say you did that. You didn't want Nico Harris.
I did overreact. All you did was overreact. But Tyrese first half. Maxey, you're sports fans. No, good. I did. Sure, you're right. You're right. Tyrese Maxey picked up his third foul with 5 minutes and 33 seconds left in the first quarter. The 76ers extended their lead from, all right, this is going to sound funny. They extended their lead to from, like, I don't know, 3 to 9 points. They were,
bro, Mavs just say down my by bad nine. And move on. Just say
I was mad. I was mad.
Just so, say my bad and move on. That's all. Just say my bad and move on. It's not a big deal. I make mistakes too, bro. Just my bad and move on. You're true. Good.
All right, my
you
bad.
You don't want
my
Nico
bad.
Harrison's job to be called for.
I want him to succeed here. I like him. I think he's a good guy, and I think he's brought a lot of organizational stability to the Mavericks. So that being said, do you, like, I got a question for all of you. Like, do you think the Mavericks are in a must-make-a-trade situation, as Brad Townsend said in his article?
No, I don't think – I don't know. No. Because if you're in that – if you operate like that, you're going to make a really stupid trade that'll hurt you more in the future. So, no, they
yeah, I don't think like anybody's – I think unless you have LeBron James on your roster, who always threatens to leave in the most cryptic ways, you're never in a must. Like, that's – like, anti-negotiation 101. You should never trade from a desperate position. Even the KP trade, I don't think that was a desperation trade. That was, look, this isn't working. We have a fit here to break it up. I think Kyrie was a desperation trade, but it was for a guy with immense talent. Now, if there's an all-NBA player who we might have to overpay for to get, I'm fine doing that, but that's not going to happen. So, no, we're not in a must-trade position.
Yeah, I don't really think we're in a must-trade position either, mostly because the vibe on the team, you know, doesn't seem to be that toxic as compared to, especially last season. It seems like everybody's getting along pretty well, and Luka and Kyrie both seem to be quite happy. So I'm not saying, like, you know, it doesn't seem like there's any reason to shake things up in the middle of the season. That being said, though, an off-season move, something like that, obviously makes a lot of sense. And there are some guys who I still want to trade, like specifically Tim. If there is some way to get value out of him, that would be nice. I guess not going too into detail on this because it feels kind of speculative at this point. But, you know, in the off-season around training camp, it didn't seem like Tim was too thrilled to be here, and he hasn't, like, I think he's picked it up this year. I think he has played up to a respectable level, but at the same time, like, you know, it's the same experience with him that just keeps on going and going with the lack of defense and whatnot. But I'm getting a little off topic here. Like, in general, no, there's no need for a move. Besides how much, you know,
I think they should make a move. If the price is right, but that's my thing with anything. Like, you know, if the price is right, make the move. That's it. But they shouldn't just operate in a, you know, you have to absolutely make a trade at this deadline, or the city is going to be destroyed type mentality. Like, no, like, you know, just make the right trade that makes sense for your franchise. Don't hamstring your team any further than you need to. It sucks that I don't know. I feel like they should be better than they are, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think must trade. I don't see that from a negotiating standpoint. I just see like they're in a position where they need to. I think the premise of Brad's article was they're at risk of wasting the best season of Luka's career if they keep going down this path, and that path is obviously continuing to lose games.
I mean, if we want to do the whole they're wasting Luka's like years, I mean, they wasted a few of his years, no? Like, and this is trending towards that too. I mean, I don't want to think about it like that, but
you could view last season as like a step back, like unexpected, some shit happened. But this season is one, and I know there's been a lot of injuries, but it's just been one where the team has not looked up to snuff for long
stretches. Dude, I'm going to be honest with you, Jay. Like, with the amount of injuries they're at and what the record is at right now, like, I'm honestly not that displeased with the record, considering what the injuries have been. Like, I'm really not. Like, I know there's been annoying-ass losses that are just part of the Mavericks culture, and I get that. But, like, just considering, like, the sheer amount of injuries they've had, they haven't even seen their starting lineup together. Like, I would love for them to be better than the record is now, obviously. But, like, I don't think it's, like, this drastic, huge failure at all. I think it's more of a success than a failure, honestly. And that's purely just because of what Derek Lively's been, honestly, because, like, that's been the most important thing to come from this season, in my opinion, is like you have a franchise pillar at center. Like you've been waiting for this guy to find next to Luka. Like for me, like yes, they might not go to the championship or whatever, but that part makes the season somewhat of a success for me.
That's fine, and I agree with you. The fact that they're 4 games over .500 with, you know, 132 plus, you know, player games missed to injury, I think is a testament to their resolve as a team, and you know, is a victory in its own right. But at the end of the day, I like you said, there have been some annoying losses, some annoying trends. Just like, you know, there's just a little bit of too much softness on this team, and I'd like that to change. You know, does it mean make a desperation move? No, it doesn't. But I'd like to see us be able to hold a 25-point lead that we build in the first quarter. You know, like those kind of things.
They need better basketball. They need better basketball players, like for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad we could agree with that. Yeah.
Wow. Exquisite takes. They need better basketball players. That's our takeaway.
And it feels like they've needed them for the last few years. I mean, it seems like it's the third year in a row that the Mavs are in that sort of position. Which is why we've seen them linked to a bunch of players. But I guess this situation is going to resolve itself, you know, in slightly over 48 hours. So excited to see what happens. But I do think the Mavericks are not in a terrible spot asset-wise. I mean, yeah, they're not rich when it comes to assets. But considering that, like, you know, some ridiculous percentage of picks are owned by, like, the Thunder and Jazz and Spurs – or whatever, like, I feel like the Mavericks do have some pieces in addition to their 2027 first. They have Omax Prosper, they have Jaden Hardy, Josh Green. They have guys that I think teams would be comfortable betting on in lieu of a first-round pick. So that's, I think, something they have going for them, and that makes things not seem as bleak as they have in previous trade deadlines. All right, I think that's all I got. Vinay, Fazl, you got anything
else? No, we didn't get speakers really up today, but I think we'll do another Spaces before the deadline on Thursday.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Alex, Fazl? Eric, apologies for not getting to y'all.
Yeah, sorry. Do apologize.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have much to say other than that. I guess I think that trading for PJ is like, I'm actually pretty down for that. It's as much as it sucks to trade Josh Green, I've been thinking it over throughout the course of this space, and he is a unique offensive player. And I remember when, you know, there was all that talk about possibly signing him last offseason. You know, he's a great player in the pick and roll. He can both handle the ball and finish really well. He's decent at spacing the floor. He has, as I think one of you guys tweeted today, he has good size, good length on defense. Like, he has a long wingspan. And he's not a terrible defender, I think. Yeah, there's the jury's kind of out on that, but I think he was part of some good lineups for the Hornets last season where they were actually not that bad defensively, which is, I guess, significant because on the whole, the Hornets just sucked ass. So, you know, he's interesting. I think a lot of his, you know, a lot of the he doesn't really get a lot of press because he plays in Charlotte, but he could actually help a contending team. I don't think he's gonna, you know, as to Zach's point, I don't think adding him isn't gonna make us like a finals contender this season, but he could be a big piece of the puzzle moving forward. Like, he could be basically what we wanted Grant to be, but I don't know. That's really all I got.
Yeah, and his contract is not too bad either. I mean, he's on a reasonable deal for his talent. I think that's more than worthy of a gamble for the Mavericks to take. And so if Kyle Kuzma is not likely to be traded or the price is too high for the Mavs to meet, then I think PJ Washington is probably the guy that I want them to go after. And hopefully they're able to expand that deal or execute another deal to, you know, either make another upgrade or get some more depth. I think that would go the longest way in making us a little bit more competitive this year. And I think with Luka and Kyrie, you have a chance in any game that you play and any series that you play. And who knows, you know, with some better players around them, maybe having two of the most talented offensive players in the game on your team, it raises your floor some more.
You know what we have not talked about is assuming he plays tomorrow on the back-to-back, I believe this will be Kyrie Irving's first game in Brooklyn since the trade.
That is true. It will be. And I do expect him to play in the back-to-back because I think the Mavericks are cognizant of that and they want to get that win for him. Hopefully everyone suits up like Luka and they're able to try and win the game.
I hope he has a masterclass in front of the horrible owner that is Joe Tsai and the horrible GM that is Sean Marks.
Yeah, Sean Marks is a horrible GM.
Hopefully we get the W, obviously.
Yeah. We need it, and I think that it is a winnable game for us to sort of get back on track because we do know that if the Mavericks do pull the trigger on a trade before the deadline, then they're likely going to be playing Thursday's game against the Knicks shorthanded, and obviously the Knicks are a really good team, so you do want to sort of win as many games as possible before you have to play Thursday's game.
Damn, against this week New York. We got a crazy schedule this week. I mean,
yeah, we do.
Well, Brooklyn's not a hard team or anything like that, but I mean, I still think it'll be a little bit emotional for Kyrie, especially. I don't care what he says tomorrow. He's gonna, you know, there's gonna be some natural emotions going back there. And then Knicks Thursday, MSG, anytime it's a game at MSG, especially when the Knicks are a good team, it's gonna be a big feeling type of game. I'm assuming it's on national TV. And then Thunder on Saturday. Fun week.
Yeah.
And hopefully with new Mavericks on Saturday.
Hopefully. And I think one angle that we didn't really touch on, and doesn't really require too much discussion, is obviously the Mavericks have a new ownership group, you know, with the Adelson and Dumont families purchasing them back in November. So I wonder how that's going to affect their approach this trade deadline, if the ownership group will want or give, you know, Mark Cuban and the front office some, you know, some directive to go out and make an impactful trade. You know, so hopefully the first season of their ownership doesn't end similar to how the last season of Mark Cuban's ownership ended last year. All right. We good?
Yeah, what's called?
All right, well, thanks, Vinay. Thanks, Fazil, for joining. Thanks, Zach, earlier, for also contributing. Apologies to Alex and Eric for we didn't get to bring you guys up, but, you know, like Vinay said, we'll try and do one before the trade deadline on Thursday, so be sure to tune in for that, and we'll be sure to have you up. So thank you guys so much. This was a long space. Glad the Mavericks could get the win tonight and excited to see what happens before 2 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. Have a good night. We'll see you soon. Go Mavs.